You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is
I Will Make You a Millionaire, another episode helping someone reach their goal of making millions.
We're talking about Jen live Twitch stream today.
Oh yeah, and it's interesting because you it's opposed to focusing on a game, you focused on marriage.
Yeah, I did.
So you know, it's interesting because everybody goes onto Twitch expecting to find gamers, but I don't know why Twitch is not just used as a live streaming platform for everything.
I agree with you. Yeah.
They do. They have like the just chatting sessions. But the thing is, the just chatting session doesn't show up at number one. Because there's so many other people just they're playing games. So, you know, algorithmically, they will just show like games that are number one.
So did you promote the Twitch on like Twitter or as Jay was saying earlier on your newsletter?
I didn't because I just wanted to test it out and see what it was like, go through the motions. So I didn't promote it at all. But I ended up having so much fun doing it that now my brain is spiraling of all the different live streams I could do. I live streamed myself writing the newsletter that I sent out this morning. And I shared my screen as I was going through it. And I just wrote the whole thing in 20 minutes. And that's what
that's
I live streamed.
That's a great idea. And how many people were watching?
Zero. But I loved it anyway. And I gave it all my full attention, even though no one was there.
That's great.
The thing is, Jen doesn't put on makeup. That's why it's zero viewers.
I know. I told Jay, I was like, I
woke
up.
That is sexist, Jay.
No, but I told him I woke up. I didn't put on makeup. I had my coffee and I just did it very raw and real. I didn't, you know, over rehearse. And I enjoyed myself.
Jen, what's your channel? I'm going to subscribe to your channel.
Oh, no. It's just Jen Glantz, I think, right? Yeah, Jen Glantz. Yeah.
I don't think you can subscribe. You can follow first because Jen is not...
Jen Glantz right now.
Thank you for your support during
check out the coffee talk stream from 2 hours ago. Oh, here's your video.
No.
Recent broadcast.
I was really hoping no one would ever find this, but
no, this is great actually. Great. Yeah. Oh, so are you sharing your screen? What were you using to do Twitch?
I use their software. So Twitch has something you download. And they let you share your screen. So I shared my screen as I was writing my newsletter. And it shows me sort of writing it, Googling for tips on things I was including. And yeah.
This is awesome. Yeah, I like this.
It's very raw and just a very big test. We could do a lot better. But you know what? I needed to get myself to finally start. And that's what I just did today.
Yeah, I like it. I've been playing around with Twitch myself. But not so consistent. You know, as we talked about last week, consistency is important.
Yeah.
And so people know when to find you on there. You could even do kind of combine your Twitter Q&A with Twitch. So that when you do like a Twitter Q&A or a Reddit AMA or whatever, you could live stream that. So you could talk while you're answering stuff on text. And so then you could respond to either the chat or Twitch or whatever. It's an unexpected use of Twitch, and I want to talk a little bit more about the unexpected today. But first, how are things going? I got your newsletter today. It was excellent. I'm loving your newsletter.
Thank you.
I'm going to share your newsletter right now, actually. Let's see. I got your newsletter.
This was the start of my 3 times a week for the newsletter. So I sent one out on Monday, I sent one out today, and I'll send one out Friday. So I'm doing the 3 times a week. I was scared at first to do that because, again, even though you said every day or three times a week, I was so scared that I was going to overwhelm people and that they would unsubscribe. But I got over that feeling, and I'm going to do three times a week for now.
Yeah, and you know, like in this one, the title of this one was, well, I'm looking at the questions right now. Let me find the title. 52 annoying questions people ask right after you get married. And I love this because you have the story. You have this woman who's like sitting down next to you on the bench, and then you have the 52 questions, and then you kind of close with, you know, reasons to share this newsletter, which I really like. And I think what might be an interesting follow-up newsletter is to answer some of these questions as well. How do you respond to the 52 annoying questions? Like if I were to ask you right now, well, okay, you just got married. When are you having kids? What would you say?
I know. I was thinking that I could maybe choose a couple of the questions and have my humorous responses, have expert responses, have real people responses, to almost open it up to all of the different ways you could answer some of these questions.
I love this.
The one that I wrote on Monday was so popular. Substack even emailed me basically saying, you know, like the automated email saying that it was on fire because so many people were looking at it. It got so many opens, so many clicks, and it was about marriage therapy. And I think it was so popular because it's such a taboo topic. It was called We Went to a Marriage Therapist Because One of Us Had a Secret. And I think there was just such a catchy nature to the title and the subtitle that it did pretty well for the amount of subscribers I have.
So how many subscribers right now do you have? Last week, you had just hit 100.
Yeah.
I think I was number 108.
You were lucky number 108, and this week we're at 200. And I only really spent about one day growing it. So I spent all day yesterday growing it from 100 to 200. And I did that in 10 more different ways.
You know, the great thing about consistency is that's the only way to kick in compounding. So what I mean by that is, like, for a long time, it feels like, oh my gosh, I only have 100. Now I have 200, now I have 400. This is nothing. I won't be successful till I have 50,000. But the good thing is that in just 20 doubles, one subscriber turns into a million subscribers. So if there's just any sort of compounding, any sort of exponential component to the growth, whether it's 1 month or 6 months or a year, sooner or later, if you're doing any kind of exponential style compounding at all, even if it's 10% a month or 2% a day or whatever, it eventually turns into tens of thousands. And you only get that compounding with, of course, quality is always assumed, but consistency. So if people know, okay, every Monday, and then, you know, and the quality implies also shareability, but it looks like you're focusing on that a lot more. So you're going to get there, and it's just a matter of, you know, the consistency and the persistence of it. So this is good.
Yeah. And I think, so I did, I used 10 different tricks this week than last week to grow it. I did the giveaway, I did the King Sumo giveaway. And
oh, really?
That got me like 20 subscribers in less than an hour, just starting the giveaway, promoting it a couple of different ways. So that was really taking off. And again, I just started it yesterday and it already gave me, you know, a handful of new subscribers.
And what are you giving away?
I'm giving away a $25 Amazon gift card and then all three of my books. So that costs me nothing except the $25 gift card, really. And so I figured the Amazon gift card would really get people to care. And then my books also just sort of put my brand back into that forefront of their mind. So that was my combination.
Yeah. Let me see. Did you mention the giveaway in the newsletter?
I didn't mention it in the newsletter because I figured people already subscribed. So I didn't mention the giveaway in the newsletter, but I mentioned
it. But you want the people who subscribed to win the contest, and they win the contest by sharing your newsletter. So they get, for every time they share and someone subscribes, they get 5 more entries to the contest.
Okay. I'm going to add it into the newsletter. Yeah, I felt like the ways that got me the most subscribers this week was the consistency. So putting out, you know, Monday and Wednesday, putting out new content, not waiting for just 1 week. The giveaway got me new subscribers, and I did a lot more promotion on my existing brands. I promoted it on my podcast, which I didn't do before. I did a whole episode on the podcast, not about the newsletter, but how I grew the newsletter from zero to 100. And because it was a growth-focused podcast, that really got me a lot of new subscribers to the newsletter. So I just made a list last week after we spoke of 10 new ways I could grow this. And that is what I did in a 24-hour period, was just act on that list, and I was able to double it.
So that's an interesting thing. So this was on your podcast. You described a growth strategy for the newsletter.
Yeah. And I positioned it as, if you want to grow anything, whether it's a project, maybe it's a new career, whatever it is, this is an episode for you. And I walked them through all of the things I did to grow the newsletter, how you could apply that to your life and your project. And then I also shared with them what worked and what didn't work. And I got a lot of feedback that people loved how there was such a purpose to the newsletter, that the podcast wasn't promotional. It was very much actionable for people to listen to.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So let me ask you, before we dive into all things marriage related, let me ask you this. You have a very unusual job. Like, I love telling your story. I went out to dinner with like 10 friends about a week ago, and people were asking me what I was up to, and I described the podcast with you, and that you were, your business that you started was, you were a bridesmaid for hire. And as you could probably imagine, everybody's first reaction is, what? And they had never heard of such a thing before. So let me ask you the question, just out of curiosity. What other jobs or entrepreneurship or lifestyle type entrepreneurs would make one say, that you've probably heard about, that would make other people say, what the hell is that? Because doing this, probably other people have contacted you and said, yeah, I do this. That's also really strange and unusual. What other things have you heard about, given that you've been in the unusual entrepreneurship category for a while now?
You know, I've heard the things that I'm sure a lot of people have heard about, the professional hugger that people pay to hug them or to cuddle with them. I've heard about that. I've even heard people in the wedding space, not so much in America, but in other places, where people will hire people to be wedding guests with the purpose of them being entertaining, like being the ones to start the party on the dance floor. I've heard people who are professional, like, criers at funerals. So people will pay. This is, I think, very
popular. Is that a real story? Is that really true?
Yeah, in other countries. I'm not sure if it's Japan or what country it is, but there is something where people will pay people to come to funerals to cry. That's one thing. So I've heard that. And those are like the similar types of things to hiring a bridesmaid, but also very different at the same time. I think a lot of the things that people turn their heads at when it comes to an odd job are things that just seem so far-fetched that they're shocked somebody had the courage to do. You know, even when I started Bridesmaid for Hire, people said to me, oh my God, like, I thought about doing that, but I never really took action on it. And it's because it takes a lot of courage to get off an airplane and walk into a person's life and be their bridesmaid. And that's why some of these jobs, I think, really turn people's heads.
I think all these things you're describing are, first off, are there any other ones you've heard of? Like, what's another one? Let's make a list. Let's push.
I've heard people, you know, who do like interesting kind of like circus act things, whether it's like, oh, this person is a professional fire eater, where they're like eat fire, or like professional sword swallower.
And now, are those people hired for circuses or for other things?
Usually for events. So not even for circus events, but maybe people will hire them for private parties or for, you know, just other types of events. So I've heard that. I got an email the other day. A woman wanted me, was talking to me about weird jobs that she's seen. And she said that she's seen a pet psychic. That was something that was very interesting to her.
And what does a pet psychic do?
A pet psychic will, I guess, maybe talk to your dog, look at your dog, examine your dog, and tell you what the dog is thinking or what the dog might be thinking next or in the future for the dog. So,
and what sort of outcomes do people want from that? Like, do they want to know the dog's going to live, or do they want to know the dog likes them? Like, what do people want from a pet psychic?
I think some people, and I might be guilty of maybe doing this in the future, want to know the dog's, you know, past before they got the dog. Where did the dog come from? What did they experience? What did they go through? So they almost want to know maybe what happened in the past and perhaps even what the future might look like for their pet. You know, when you love your pet, you will spend money on anything. That is the kind of industry where if you love your animal, you will pull out your credit card for anything.
And then what's another one?
I think another one that I've heard of is a professional, you know, like the professional wingman sort of thing, which I think people are always very fascinated by.
I've heard of a professional wing girl, because if a guy goes to a bar, much better than having a wingman is a wing girl, because other women will see the guy with a girl. So they think it's like social proof. They figure, oh, if this nice looking girl likes this guy, he must be at least acceptable to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like that's such an interesting thing, is because I think that there's nothing wrong with that either. You know, I actually thought about, I thought about starting this business. I don't think that I could do this business, but I would hire somebody to do this for me, is a professional who teaches you how to have conversations. You know, I would almost hire a person who can sit down with me and work with me on how to get better at having conversations.
I need to hire that as well. Like, I'm good at these conversations, and I'm good at my thing is I'm good at talking to like thousands of people in a talk, or I'm good at going on stage and doing stand-up comedy. But if it's me hanging out socially with a group of people, even people I know well, I am silent. I can't talk at all. I need that help.
I walk into a room sometimes and I just freeze. And that's something that I would totally hire. I would pay $150 an hour for that. Yeah. Another one that I did see was, I forgot the name of the service, but you can, this woman has a very interesting business. You can hire somebody to go to a party with you and help you socialize. So you can hire this person for $25 an hour to come to a party with you and take you into a social setting, into a circle of people, and get you talking, get you socializing. And I thought that was cool. And the business model she had was pretty interesting, because she wanted to take on no risk. So it was her service was really matching people who wanted to do this with people who needed this, without really taking on risk or hiring employees. So it was almost like a matching service. And I thought that was really cool.
That reminds me of a conversation we had last week, where what's essentially the three components of every business in its purest form. And so Uber is a good example, where people who have an excess of one thing, you have other people who want access to that excess, and you have a platform in the middle. So Uber, some people have an excess of empty car seats. Other people want access to those empty car seats to get from one place to another. And Uber is just the platform in the middle. There's no employees. They're just a matching of people who need car seats to people who have car seats. And this woman is doing that perfectly with the party thing. Uber takes no risk. There's no employees. There's no responsibility if there's an accident or whatever. And they don't have to pay all the, they don't have to deal with all the headaches of employees. And it's just a match. Say Airbnb is just a matching service.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that that's a good business model, because you're not liable, and you're almost serving as that middle person. Another person I heard of that I've done some work with is a friendship coach who teaches you how to make new friends.
I love that.
What's wrong with that? Because people use that dating app Bumble to meet friends. So this person will, and I wrote an article where I interviewed her. She gave me experiments to meet people. She gave me three experiments of things I can do to go meet new friends. All three were wildly uncomfortable, and they didn't necessarily work, but they could work. So people can pay her to help them make new friends.
Can you tell me the exercises?
Yeah, one of them she wanted me to do was, for 1 week when I was out places, making eye contact and just striking up conversation with everyone. So if you're in line to get coffee, find a reason to talk to the person in front of you, behind you, which is sort of awkward to do in New York City. So that was one. And no, it didn't make me any friends, but it did. The point of that experiment was to help push you to be more social in situations that you might hide from. And you never know who you're going to meet. Yeah, it was practice.
It's exercising that muscle,
which I need to exercise more of. Another one she said was to find a new hobby and go to that hobby multiple times. So if you're going to go to a yoga class with the purpose of making a friend, that first time you're probably not. But what if you went 6 times, and every time you went, you made an effort to speak to people? That might help. She says a lot of times people go places, to a networking event, to a conference, whatever it is, with this goal. And then when they don't succeed at the goal, they never go back. So she made me pick something and go to it multiple times. And I didn't meet anybody, but I found myself meeting people who I made, small talk with and things like that. The third thing, which was the most uncomfortable, was to message a friend of a friend, or somebody that you have met, once or twice, who's like maybe a distant acquaintance, and make plans with them. Because oftentimes some of your new friends can be friends of friends, but we just don't always think about that. And that was tough, because you know, I think with friendship, it's so awkward to say, hey, you know, I like you, want to get coffee. Like, it's just, it's so awkward because you're not dating the person, but it feels like you are. And I'm just not good at that.
Yeah, I love all these exercises. So, you know what? So by the way, we made 11 on our list of weird jobs. And what's interesting about all of these, except for maybe the only exception that I'm about to categorize all these, and the only one that doesn't count is the fire eater / sword swallower. But all of these sort of suggest that jobs are created by some sort of disconnect in our culture. Mm-hmm. So the fact that some people need a professional hugger means something went wrong along the way with society, that people feel so disconnected from the others around them or alienated that they need to pay someone for a hug, or they need to pay someone to teach them how to have a conversation with somebody, or they need to pay someone to be a guest at their wedding. And it's interesting because I wonder, and the reason I bring this up is people in the beginning of the pandemic were looking for new ways to make money that were different from the old ways, because, you know, everybody was sort of, 55 million people were fired or laid off. And I wonder if there's another newsletter opportunity called Weird Jobs, where maybe it doesn't have to be 3 times a week. Maybe this one's just once a month, or who knows. But you explore another weird job. And the reason this is different from the marriage one has a huge audience, a huge potential audience. This also has a huge and completely different potential audience, because people want to make money. People still don't want to go back to, if you just had a year off from your job, maybe you don't want to go back and you want to be a professional hugger or a professional wingman or wing girl or, you know, a friendship coach or arrange people to go to parties with other people. I don't know. Maybe there's something there of a newsletter about weird jobs, or a course, or whatever, or just a one-off book, 101 Weird Jobs, and you sell that from your original newsletter and podcast and so on. So I just throw stuff out there. I just was curious because you had such a weird job, or have such a weird job / business, that I'm sure you must have been exposed to many ideas about other sorts of, you know, people. There's probably a community of people who have weird jobs or hear about weird jobs, and they hear about your job and they say, oh, that reminds me of this person I know who's professional, you know, office worker, or, you know, like they're a fake office worker to show clients how many employees there are at a business or whatever. Yeah. Some weird thing. And I just throw it out there. It's another potential interesting topic.
Yeah, you're right. I feel like us weird job people, we're always on the lists, like the articles. We're always, you know, on the same articles together. We're always on the same TV shows together. I feel like we should start, you know, like a meetup. But I love that. And I think, you know, I was always exploring the idea of doing a course about it, because so many people are like, how did you do it? And not even the bridesmaid aspect of it, but how did you take a weird idea and turn it into a business? Almost like a course on how to turn anything you love or anything you enjoy into a business, because maybe you do love giving people hugs, but making that a business is probably the same as becoming a friendship coach, you know? So maybe it's a course like that, but I think it's a great idea, because so many people not only want to know about these weird businesses, but they want to know about the business model, and they want to know how they can start something like it.
And I think in some cases they want to hear stories.
Yeah.
Like, if someone's a professional wing girl, she probably has a lot of like weird, insane stories. And again, why are they weird? It's because, again, all of this is about some disconnect, some alienation that people have as society has drifted, you know, in the past from 100 years, everybody's left the village, everybody's left the family home, and they're out there on their own in this increasingly urbanized, you know that saying, like, you know, in New York City, when people first move to New York City, a common thing they say is, I never saw so many people and I never felt so alone at the same time. And all of these weird jobs that you mentioned are related to this disconnect of being around people but feeling disconnected from them. And I wonder what other things there are, like, you know, maybe like when many people are moving now, moving cities, maybe almost like a concierge service, like when you move into a city, here's how we're going to find you all the basic services. Here's how you're going to make friends. Here's how you're going to find relationships. You know, almost like a concierge. Here's all the great restaurants to go to and we'll make reservations for you. Almost, maybe that's another thing. I'm just thinking of, that might be a bad idea. Bad idea is always acceptable. I'm just thinking of what other times people feel disconnected by, you know, for 40,000 years, humans lived one way. And now for the past 100 years, humans have lived in a completely different way, which has caused the need for a pet psychic. You know, people feel lonely. So they want, what they really want to know is their pet has feelings similar to they have. So they want to know what those feelings are.
I think anything could be a business, though. Like, if you think about any life moment, any life problem, anything day to day, anything could be a business. People pay people for everything, like whether it's home organization or organizing the clothes in your closet by color or meal prepping for you. Or, I mean, people are willing to pay for anything these days. So I really think like anything can be a business. People pay people to come in their house and clear the energy in their space. You know, that's a whole world right there.
Believe me, I have had that happen. I've used one of those people, not me, but an ex-wife, used one of those people, and that person made a lot of money.
Yeah. And, I think it's almost like, this is what I'm so passionate about encouraging people. If you have a skill or you have something that you like doing, you can make money off of it. You know, I think also another thing that always strikes me is, even as we're talking about all of these odd businesses, and maybe I'm the weird person, but a huge part of me is thinking I would hire almost all of these people. You know, I think most people, when they call it weird, what they're also trying to say is that's so interesting. And then they start to question whether or not they would even hire that person. I think when I started Bridesmaid for Hire, people were like, that's crazy. But then secretly a part of them was like, actually, I could have hired you. Or, oh, you know, I don't want to admit it, but I do need someone like you.
Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, Of course, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I was just talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long and both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 bacon bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the bacon cheese slider, 1921 bacon cheese slider, or chicken bacon ranch slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 bacon bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
I don't know if anybody does this at all, but it seems to me this would be an interesting job and this person would have interesting stories if there was a job, is a person who helps people make people disappear. Like if somebody just wants to have a new identity for some reason, be interesting to, if you know, it's skirting some regulatory area, but you know, someone who's a professional disappearer.
Yeah,
like here's
I love
how
it.
You, yeah, they don't get you the fake passport because that would be illegal, but they tell you, hey, not recommending anything, but if one did want to do this, this is what one would do.
Okay, and I so, love that.
I wonder if that exists. If anybody listening to this knows a professional disappearer, let us know.
I'm obsessed. I have one that I'm going to throw out there. I'm obsessed with watching The Sopranos right now. So what if it's like hire a mafia person or an ex-mafia person for the day and just get a tour of their life, you know? I know there's a guy on Airbnb that does this and makes a lot of money doing like mafia tours. But I would hire someone to show me around and take me around for the day.
Or like, now there is a service to hire bodyguards. Here, this is just another one. There is obviously services to hire bodyguards, but what about hiring a fake bodyguard? So what I mean is, like, you know, sometimes like when you go to a bar or you see bodyguards with celebrities, they're huge, they're massive people, and they're ready to kill you. Now, I don't want to hire someone who's ready to kill somebody, but I want to hire 2 big people to just follow me around. Like two huge people, so that when I walk around with 2 huge people right behind me, everyone looks. Like, what if I'm planning on playing in my first chess tournament in 25 years in a few weeks. What if I hired 2 fake bodyguards to just stand behind me during each game so that my opponent is just utterly intimidated? Like, that would be kind of funny to me. And okay. I would pay money for that.
What about hiring just a group of people to walk behind you so you look important, or hiring paparazzi, or hiring someone to take your Instagram photos for you for a week? You know, I feel like anything to make you feel important, or, you know, I think the cool thing with like Airbnb experiences is you have so many people on there who are doing this, who are putting out services just like that.
Oh, that's interesting. Let me see. So I remember they Airbnb has a conference every year, or at least they used to for all the people who are hosts, meaning they own apartments that they Airbnb out. And I actually gave one of the headline talks for this conference, because I was living in Airbnbs at the time. And that was the conference where they announced Airbnb experiences. I wonder if those have like taken off, if they're doing well.
Yeah, they have. I've done them. I've done them during the pandemic, before the pandemic, and I've loved them. I did one where I did like a walking tour in LA where they take your picture. So like by the Hollywood sign, it was very cheesy, but you know, if you want some good Instagram photos, there's all these like tours like that. Like, oh, I'm an influencer, I'll take you around for the day and show you how to pose like an influencer. Or I'm the best vintage shopper in New York City, I'll shop with you one day. I think there's a mafia tour. There's, you know, there's things just like what we're talking about that would be considered odd jobs, but on Airbnb experience, they're considered to be cool.
Oh my God, here's one who helps. He's a professional sandcastle builder on beaches. So he helps people build amazing sandcastles. And here's one. You can design your own custom fragrance. Let's see. Yeah, the Airbnb experiences are a good source of these. I wonder if anyone's making... So what's one step up where somebody's making like a lot of money? Because these ones, they're probably not making a lot of money. But I wonder, what's a weird thing people can do that makes a lot of money? So so I was reading about something recently where a good job is to go to, like, let's say law firms and say usually when a law firm is done with a computer, they can't just throw it out because there's regulations. They have all this sort of private legal data. And if someone were to steal out of the garbage their computers, they would have access to a lot of private information that's legally protected. So before a law firm, in many cases, I don't know how many law firms obey the laws, but in many cases, a law firm has to do all sorts of things to clean their computers. So I wonder if you go around and say, look, I'll take your computers for free. I'll just do this for free. You don't have to throw them out and take this risk. I am verified in some way, or I'll prove to you that I've cleaned the computer, but you just give it to me for free. They clean the computer and then they sell the cleaned computer on eBay and make a living. And that's like a multi-billion dollar industry right now. And so there's all sorts of like weird jobs and weird industries out there that people have no idea even exist. Or like another guy I know, he takes recyclables from people, strips the steel out of the recyclables, and then resells the steel on the steel market. The steel is like a commodity and has a price, and you take people's recyclables that they were throwing away for free anyway, and or you take businesses' recyclables, so it's a much greater amount, and you strip the steel out of it. It's an ugly business. You're basically collecting garbage and then going through the garbage to find steel, but then you make a lot of money with no costs of just, you know, the cost of stripping out the steel, but that's it, and you sell the steel on the steel market.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of very unglamorous businesses like that, whether in like the cleaning industry or even with like pandemic cleaning for the virus. Or I heard about, you know, people who clean movie theater screens can make a lot of money. All of those kinds of things can be so huge. But I think people don't ever think about that. They never go there.
You know, someone who basically pandemic proofs an office space.
Yep. Yep.
Can be a regular, once a month they come in and pandemic proof the office space, meaning the sanitizers are all replaced, the cleaning equipment, you know, the cleaning sprays are all replaced, the doorknobs maybe are replaced, I don't know. You make sure the cubicles, the architecture is just right. I don't know. So anyway, my point is that that's one step higher up than the initial jobs of like pet psychic and so on. Like these are jobs that can actually make an enormous amount of money and are scalable because you built a brand and then you can hire people for it and who can't steal your business. So yeah, it seems like one interesting idea for a newsletter is just one called Weird Jobs. You know, either you'd get like tens of thousands of subscribers, or people would, people would pay for a paid for subscription perhaps later on. Anyway, I'm just practicing thinking up ideas. Particularly, I started thinking of, you know, everybody. You can, it's like a story. You know, there's this Rashomon story where something happens and you see that story from like five different points of view, and everybody sees it from a completely different point of view. So you are a bridesmaid for hire. So on the one hand, one point of view is, oh, how do you become a bridesmaid for hire? Another point of view is, oh, you know an extraordinary amount about marriages from a different angle than other people. Another point of view that I could look at you as is, you're someone who knows something about weird jobs. And there's probably many different ways to slice your experience so that you can get just as much knowledge, but just from a different angle. And I started thinking, oh, well, one thing Jen knows about, along with being a good bridesmaid, is weird jobs that are out there, because that's a weird job. And then not only that, how to monetize a weird job in unusual ways. Like you wrote a book, it's not that you're just a bridesmaid for hire. It also was opened the door for you getting publicity. It opened the door for you writing books. It opened the door for you having a podcast. So what one can do with a weird job is not just the weird job, but all these other spokes around the weird job. So it strikes me that that's another potential newsletter. Not that you should do it, but maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. It's just an idea for the day.
But you know what I'm thinking though is like, are there places, like what if there was one website where everyone who had a weird job could list their weird job, and anybody who wanted to hire something weird could go there to find that, you know, like could it be a marketplace? Cause yeah, Airbnb has a little bit of that with their experiences, but is there a place that people can go to list all of their weird jobs? And then people who are like, hey, I have some money, I want to spend it, can go there and find that service, you know, because right now all these odd jobs are scattered everywhere.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize, for instance, that you could hire wedding guests who will start the dancing. But if I was having a big wedding with 300 people, maybe I would want to hire one or two people to be professional guests just to make sure it's fun. Or maybe if someone was living right near me and I was going to some random party where I didn't know a lot of people, maybe I would hire someone to come with me to the party because I'm feeling a little shy or whatever.
Yeah.
Or just for fun, maybe I would hire two fake bodyguards to walk with me down Main Street or whatever of some town. And that would be fun. Or maybe I would look at the weird job marketplace and think to myself, I could do that. And I could do it in a different way. And now I have a weird job that could maybe make $1 million, like this, you know, getting this steel from recyclables or something like that. Because it's probably, on the one hand, it's a commodities type of business. Anyone can do it. But on the other hand, and this is what this guy told me, the uglier the business, the less competition, the more money you can make.
Right.
So like everybody wants to be a movie star. So that's too competitive. It's not, obviously it's not an ugly business. And it's very hard to make money if you're an actor. But if I want to say, look, I'm going to pick up garbage and find steel in it, people will say, go right ahead. You're better you than me.
Yeah.
And so ugly business, you know, or another, that's another title for a newsletter, is ugly businesses. So
oh, I love it.
Yeah. So there's something there just to think about. And it's interesting because, you know, and the reason I'm thinking about this, I remember when in the early 80s, I think it was Showtime or maybe it was the Movie Channel started another movie channel. So it was like the Movie Channel, and then they started something else. I forget what else, another channel. So their salespeople were going around and trying to sell people two channels. And so HBO at the time heard about this, and HBO only had HBO. And so they figured, okay, the best way to compete is they needed to start another channel. So they started Cinemax, and now they were competitive again, selling against the Movie Channel's other alternatives. And so, you know, the lesson being, you know, having two things you're selling is almost better than one because each could link to the other. And just made me think. I don't know, again, yeah, if that works in this context and you're working really hard on the marriage newsletter, but it's just always something to think about because I think again, you know, last time the reach was going from one newsletter a week to three or more newsletters a week. Maybe there's another reach here where, I don't know, might be too much of a reach, or maybe there's also the thought that we should branch out from newsletters, but I'm just thinking of other ways to you know, you want to have as many irons in the fire as possible to give yourself as many chances as possible to see what lights on fire. I do think the marriage newsletter will light on fire, but I always think of, you know, even for myself right now, I'm starting at least two different businesses, plus I have my old business I still make money from, plus I write, plus I do a podcast. So I always try to think of, plus I invest. I always try to think of, you know, and I've said this on the podcast before in other situations, but even the IRS says the average multimillionaire has somewhere between 5 and 7 streams of income.
Yeah.
And so it's just an interesting thing to start thinking about is what's the next, not just spoke around marriage, but spoke around business in general.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you about this because, you know, even yesterday someone asked me, so what do you do? And I said, you know, I do a lot of different things. Here's 7 to 10 ways I make money every month. None of them make me a ton of money, but here's what I do. And this person said, you are exhausting and you need to stick to just one thing. And I feel the same way as you. I like to have multiple things going on, but I guess my question is, number one, when do you know when to stop something? And two, when do you know, okay, let me get this in a good place before starting something else? Because I feel like I have a collection of so many things that are at this level that are not quite where they should be, but I'm not really investing so much time. So I feel like a bit of a mess. And I don't really know what to do with all the things I already have.
So it's a good question. And there's no 100% answer. So I could just talk from my experience. Like, first off, a real quick precursor. I made a lot of money in a business in the 90s. I made websites for, you know, when very few companies had websites. Like I made AmericanExpress.com, TimeWarner.com, and so on. And I sold that business and made a lot of money. And then I went totally broke. That's like my core story in my books and everything like that. But first off, even that first business, we had no idea if that was a good business or not, making websites. Who knows? We didn't know if the internet was really going to be the thing. And so we debated, like, should we also be in the iced tea business? Should we also start a record label? Like, we were constantly trying to come up with new ideas. And we didn't really come up with anything else. But we did sell that business anyway of making websites, and I made a lot of money, and then I went broke. So then the next time around, I did more of the collection of income streams idea, which is I started writing every day. So I was selling articles for $200 an article, but I was doing articles 30 days a month. So, yeah. It was like $400 an article then. Oh no, maybe I forget now. Let's just say I think it was $400 an article. So I was making about $10,000 a month from articles. Now people don't pay as much for articles. Back then they did. But then also I started writing for the Financial Times. So that was once a week and that was $500. So it was another $2,000. And then I would start getting book deals. So the advances weren't huge because it was I was just starting and I was doing financial books. So my advances would be like $10,000 and I would do one a year. But still it was adding to things. And then I started speaking about finance stuff. I was a spokesperson for Fidelity and I didn't charge them a lot, but I was making, let's say, another $50,000 or $60,000 a year from that. And then I started managing money a little bit and I was small. I wasn't making huge, but maybe that was another $50,000 to $100,000. And so it was adding up that doing like six to 10 different things. Some of them didn't make any money. Some of them made more money. I was probably making between $250,000 and $300,000 a year. Now, mind you, I had been worth millions at one point, lost it all. So I was rebuilding. But the only way I could rebuild without having to have an actual employer was by doing lots of different things because no one thing paid my salary really. It was only through doing a lot of things. And then I started dabbling in starting other businesses, which I eventually did, or investing, which I eventually did, but only in very tiny amounts. I didn't have that much money, so I would invest in very tiny amounts and it would build up. But so your friend who told you stick to one thing, is absolutely wrong. Because again, and this is not coming from my own anecdotal experience, the IRS actually says the average multimillionaire has at least five different streams of income. So a job is just one stream. And by the way, even a business is just one stream. So of course, some people make millions from a job. Some people make millions starting a business and selling it. But that's relatively rare. You hear the stories, oh, somebody just sold their business, made $10 million. You hear a lot of stories, but it's relatively rare and a little bit of luck that somebody just doing one thing makes a lot of money. To make a lot of money at a job, you have to be the CEO of a big company. To make a lot of money at a business, the business has to A, succeed, it has to be a great idea, and you have to sell it. Or you have to generate so much income from it that it makes you a lot of money. So relatively a rare thing. But like someone who owns a laundromat, that's a business, but maybe they make a salary, but that's about it. So your friend's not correct if you want to make $1 million. You have to do multiple things, and you have to manage part of the thing about making a lot of money and doing multiple things is you have to manage your time. So you can't really go out with friends seven nights a week, because you have to, you know, wake up an hour earlier than everyone else, or stay awake an hour earlier than everyone else and not be drinking so that you can focus on writing the next newsletter or whatever. Yeah, and it's not like you have to be so strict with yourself that you have to cut out everything fun in your life, but you probably can't binge watch Game of Thrones for the eighth time in a row. You probably have to, that's 160 hours you've lost. And in those 160 hours, you could have written probably 160 newsletters.
Yeah.
So just by not watching Game of Thrones, that's an entire year's worth of newsletters potentially. And so that's a whole income stream that simply binge watching Game of Thrones denies you the opportunity to do. And so you can pick and choose which areas you cut, but you have to be very efficient with your time. You know, also, you have to figure out more ways to scale. So for instance, you mentioned people. One job is people come in and organize houses. So that's like the Marie Kondo thing. Marie Kondo wrote this book. Gosh, I forgot the name of it. Do you remember the name of that Marie Kondo book?
Is it The Art of Tidying Up?
The Art of Tidying Up. But that is not how she made her money.
She has the Netflix show, right? She has all that.
And that is not the way she made money. So the life-changing magic of Tidying Up sold millions of copies. Her Netflix show did very well. But even if a book sells a million copies, maybe I don't even know if you make $1 million from that. Like, you do well, and your next book will probably have a good advance, but you're probably not making $1 million from the book. And a Netflix show pays almost nothing because it's like they're a monopoly. You want a Netflix show, you're going to do it for almost nothing. But here's how Marie Kondo made, and by the way, then a lot of people called Marie Kondo and said, hey, can you organize my house? But that doesn't make a lot of money. All these things were just spokes for her. Maybe all together they did okay, but how she really made money, maybe tens of millions of dollars, is she set up a training program to teach people how to be a Marie Kondo coach, a Marie Kondo certified coach at tidying up. So now they can go to people and advertise their business. Hey, I'm certified by Marie Kondo to tidy up your house. And that's how she made her money, is by selling her coaching certification. And so she figured out different ways to scale her business. She had the multiple spokes around this one. The wheel was tidying up, and she had these multiple spokes like book and TV show and doing it herself. But then it's this certification program that was another spoke where she made something like $30 million. And and you only get to do that if you're constantly exposing yourself to new ideas of things to do and new spokes for your business and new wheels even to build spokes off of and so on. And that's the one that worked for her.
I appreciate hearing this because I feel like so many people I encounter look at my life, look at my 7 to 10 ways I make my money and say things like, you have to focus on one. If you don't pick one, nothing's ever going to work out. They say those things and you sometimes start to believe it. You know, I think a lot of times when I explain to people what I do, I have this fear, and maybe I'm projecting, that they think I don't do anything well, that they think I just do a mixture of everything. But, you know, I've been working for myself for 6 years and I do have 7 to 10 streams of income. And I'm self-employed. I make all of my money myself. So I'm doing something right. But you definitely hear people judge somebody who is doing so many different things in their life.
Yeah. And so there's two things to unpack there. And I still haven't fully answered when you decide to quit. So one thing is I actually just yesterday, I wrote the foreword to a book. It's someone who's been on this podcast quite a bit, Brian Keating. He is a well-known physicist. He almost won the Nobel Prize. So he wrote a book called Losing the Nobel Prize. And he on his podcast, he's interviewed a lot of podcast Nobel Prize winners. And so he's writing a book, which we talked about on my podcast, called Into the Impossible. But it's basically, he describes how all these Nobel Prize winners, what did they do differently to become Nobel Prize winners? And he asked me to write the foreword. And I totally was hit with imposter syndrome. Like, who am I to write a foreword for a book about Nobel Prize winners? And particularly, like I feel like all these Nobel Prize winners, since the age of 4, they've been physicists. And, you know, when they were 21, they figured out how, you know, quarks turn into atoms, and they win the Nobel Prize, and they do all the research and math and all that. And I've been, you know, a computer programmer and a writer and a stand-up comedian and an entrepreneur, you know, all these different things. I feel like a dilettante sometimes, that, you know, kind of mildly good at many things, but not like the best in the world at anything. And so I think that's an okay thing, because not everybody becomes a Nobel Prize winner, and we have to live life. And the other thing is that, so the other thing to unpack is, when do you quit something? Because sometimes it is too many things. And I think, you know, you quit something essentially when you no longer enjoy it. So if you love doing something, even if it doesn't make money, you should continue to do it. Because it's like you said, if you love something enough and you're persistent with it enough, there is some way to make money at it. And I look at, for instance, I'll take chess as an example. Not everybody, there's 65 million people around the world play chess maybe once a day. And not of those 65 million people, only 10 people are in the top 10. And only the top 10 can make a living playing chess. But then there's some people who stream playing chess on Twitch, for instance. And we were talking about Twitch earlier. But I know people who are maybe in the top 10,000 or the top 100,000 of chess players in the world, but they're making a better living than some people in the top 10 because they're killing it on Twitch now. Or maybe there's other streams. They started a publishing company selling chess books to the 65 million people who are interested in chess, and they're making a killing. So if you love something enough, you're going to find some spoke over the years where your love could be transformed into money. And I'll just use, you know, I'll pick a different sport as an example. So I'll pick tennis. So in tennis, if you're playing tennis and you're constantly slamming it, you know, to the other side, so you're in control of the point. Like, you're the one who's the other person's barely returning the ball. You're hitting it constantly to one corner as fast as possible. Your opponent is barely returning it, but you're in control of the situation. So now you can't win that way. You can't win because he's always returning it. But what you could do is you can transform your advantage, that you're slamming it harder than he is, so he's a little off balance. You could transform that advantage into a winning advantage by then hitting it to the other side of the court unexpectedly. And what my point is that if you love something enough, you'll learn more about it, and you'll be able to transform that advantage, which is your love and knowledge for something, into something you can monetize. Everything's about transforming advantages into a better advantage, and or a different advantage, so a monetizable one in this case. So that's why I agree with you that no matter what you love, you build up enough knowledge and experience and network, and you're able to transform your advantages into something you monetize over time. But when you don't love it anymore, that's when you should probably give up, or when it's just too hard, or things are difficult and there's a struggle. And like, for instance, for you to go from 200 subscribers to 20,000 is going to be hard, But that's a good thing if you love doing it, if you enjoy doing it. You don't have to love it every moment because it's a struggle. Nobody loves pain and too much struggle. But if you love it enough and it's too much of a struggle one day and you wake up the next day and you want to go at it again, you're still in love with it, even if not every single minute. But if just over a period of time you think, this is just not working, it's more of a gut feeling. Like one time I started a business, I created an online dating service and I raised money for it. Everybody wired their money. And the day after everybody wired their money, I woke up like in a panic because I just didn't really feel like I could do this. Like I didn't feel like I knew what I was doing. So I just simply wired everyone's money back and shut it down. And I was out some money. I had spent some money building the business, but I didn't want to double down on it. I didn't want to put good money after bad. And so I just gave up. Or another time, I was doing a podcast called Question of the Day with Stephen Dubner, who's a co-author of Freakonomics. We did like 150 episodes or so. And it was fun. And I enjoyed hanging out with Stephen. Was doing it three times a week. But it became a chore. Mm-hmm. And we weren't growing anymore. Like, if anything, our download numbers were going down a little bit. So it was time to give up. We had maxed out what we were going to get from that. And there were other things I was interested in.
Yeah.
So you just kind of know when to quit something. And that sounds like a bad answer, but it's the only answer, really. There's no formula.
I get it. I feel like it's a character flaw. I was like this in relationships too, where I knew it was a wrong relationship, but I'm so loyal, you know? And I think that's a blessing and a curse. But I think another question I was going to ask you was, when do you know, like, hiring someone to help you? I've been a solopreneur for so long. And even with some of these projects, even with the newsletter, when do you think to yourself, okay, Jen, you have to hire an assistant. You have to hire someone to help with this. I'm the kind of person where I don't hire anybody. I learn. And then I do it based on how much I've learned how to do it. You know, I figure things out. And I think that's definitely a flaw too, is not knowing when to bring someone in to maybe help with some of these projects.
This is a great question too. So in my first business, it was called Reset. Again, it was the business that made websites. I was really against hiring anybody until finally we had so much work that I had to hire somebody. And then I was really against hiring a secretary or an assistant until finally I was just getting so many phone calls and dealing with so many menial tasks I didn't want to do that I had to hire a secretary. So you only hire when you're at the brim of, you just can't move one more inch.
Yeah.
Unless you hire someone to help you move that inch. Or if you have like an easy task that is, you know, you're just not qualified. Like, for instance, I used to be a computer programmer, but I majored in computer science and my first business involved me as a programmer. But now it's 20 years later, I can't really program. So if I needed a programmer, I would hire that. So it's also good to hire when you know that if I spend $10, I'm going to make $100. If I spend $10,000, I'm going to make $100,000. So you hire when it's accretive to your earnings. So let's say you know that you being entrepreneurial makes you $500 an hour, you're okay hiring someone for $30 an hour to do tasks that you don't want to do, like, you know, whatever it is in the newsletter business, like organizing a King Sumo contest, for instance, or whatever. So then you can hire an assistant for those things. But yeah, I agree with you. Be very careful about hiring an assistant.
Yeah.
Until you absolutely need it.
I've always been weird about spending money on things, but you know, even with this newsletter, I'm so proud of myself because I was like, you know, I'm just going to spend money. One of the ways I'm going to grow it is, and I was researching this and I found this way, is you can pay to advertise your newsletter in another person's newsletter, right? So I found a newsletter that had an audience that I thought could be similar, and I paid for an ad that's going out July 16th. And I thought that was a huge step for me because I'm so cheap and I don't like to pay for things. But I was like, you know what, Jen? It was $120, which I think is a lot, but it could maybe give me 50, hopefully 50 new subscribers. That to me was worth it.
Yeah, and so that's a great idea, and particularly, where's the audience of newsletter readers? Well, they're reading newsletters,
right?
So it's a great idea to buy an ad in a newsletter. But here's the thing, and you discovered this with Facebook ads a few weeks ago. The critical thing is always measuring success and failure. So you just want to know that, where did the traffic come from? Did it come from an email, which might mean that they subscribe after or came to your site after reading the ad in another newsletter, or maybe you set up a special URL from the ad so it goes, so you could track it. You just want to basically make sure you have the right analytics for all these things.
Yeah.
And you know, there's all sorts of weird ways to advertise that might be cheap. Like during the pandemic, it might've been cheap to advertise on billboards. Or one time Jay and I tried an experiment where I put an ad in, you know, New York City cabs, you know, those TVs in the New York City cabs. I bought some ads in that just to see if what would happen. Nothing much, yeah. But it's an experiment. Experiments are always worth it. If you can measure success, if you have a metric beforehand of how you're going to judge success, and then you make sure you are able to actually execute on that. But yeah, so this brings us to how's it going? what have you been up to this week?
So this week I made it my goal to double the subscribers, which I did. I made it my goal to start the 3 times a week frequency, which I did. And I remember last time we talked about like maybe brainstorming ideas outside of the wedding industry. So I brainstormed 10 potential business ideas or categories outside the wedding industry. That was hard. That took me a lot of time to figure out and do. So those are some of the things that I was working on. But I also just because I'm feeling so inspired, I've been making little changes to existing businesses and projects of mine and seeing such a change. You know, with my Bridesmaid for Hire business, I changed some of the landing pages. I added videos. I just made some really quick changes. And I've seen a lot of success from just little things like that. So I noticed that even when I'm working on the newsletter or new things like that, I'm just finding myself really spilling over on other projects, making little changes and doing experiments too.
This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs and the small dogs who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
You experimented on Twitch.
Yeah.
You streamed on Twitch, which I would try a couple more times. So now I'm looking at some of these 10 businesses outside, like card decks. I love that idea. You know, maybe there's even card decks, like the Should You Get Married card game.
Yeah.
And maybe it's like you have like 100 different situations and there's probably a game there somewhere.
Yeah.
Where a couple plays it and I give my fiance or girlfriend or whatever two cards. And you know, maybe it's like a gourmet restaurant or a Broadway show. And then she writes down which one she likes better. And then I have to pick. So almost like the Newlywed Game.
Yeah.
And then I have to pick which one she likes better. And then a certain score means you guys hate each other. A certain score means you guys are friends. And a certain score means you only have physical attraction, and another score means yeah, you should get married, and then the top score is you should be grandparents together. And you know, so that's one idea. Or it could be like your sister is here's a situation that's in one of the cards. It could be just a situational kind of game. So a card says your sister's husband is cheating on her. Do you tell your sister? And I have to guess what she would do, and she writes down what she would do, and then we compare, you know, who's right, and you could score it, and then it's the way people get to know each other. So I think that's an exciting, I think making a card game for couples, should they get engaged, should you be engaged or not?
Yeah.
Or should you be married? Or should you get married? Sorry. And that might be a fun card game that would sell a million, you know, decks. you'd sell it off your newsletter.
I am obsessed with starting a card deck. This was a goal of mine in the beginning of the year because I see them really exploding. There's some people out there who have created these card decks, these games, and they sell really, really well. I was even thinking of one for the first years of marriage, you know, something catchy around like tough conversations or conversations to have your first year of marriage, games or activities, challenges, experiments, like something around the first years of marriage, because that could be a product that I think could really sell. But then again, it could just be relationship card decks in general, like the Should You Get Married card deck, the First Years of Marriage card deck, the Before You Go to a Marriage Therapist card deck, you know, like all these different kinds of things.
Yeah, so let's think about this for a second. Now, it seems overwhelming, like, oh my gosh, how am I going to make a card deck? But if you really break it down, this is the beauty of breaking things down. It actually is not so overwhelming. No. So let's say we're going to do that situational one where it's like some really tricky situation and one side writes down what they would do, the other side predicts what they would do. And so, okay, the first thing is, let's say you have to come up with 200 situations.
Yeah.
That's step number one. That's not so hard. Have a cup of coffee in the morning, you write down 200 situations, maybe two or three mornings. It just takes you a couple hours.
Or you go on Quora, my new favorite place, Quora, and you research what people are asking. I mean, people are asking such honest things, and you write down those situations.
Exactly. Yeah, like, there's so many situations on Quora. That's a great idea. So, okay, number of situations, that's not overwhelming. You can do that. I'm going to Google right now, how do I print a card deck?
There's so many places you can do it. I've researched this and it's so many places you can do it. It's not that expensive and you can customize an entire card deck.
Yeah. Like here's one, shuffledinc.com. Request a quote for your game cards.
Yep.
Done.
Yep.
So all you have to do is give them situations and pay for a card deck to be made. Okay. No problem. So get a card deck printed. 10 seconds because you just have to hire them. And then maybe you need like illustrations and design, but maybe they do that actually. Let me see. I'm going to just hit this one link. It's an ad. I'm giving Google a little bit, 3 cents or whatever they paid for this ad. Custom playing cards. Do they design? Let's see about, they have templates and graphics. So, okay. Your design's all done. So I don't know. It seems like it takes 5 seconds. I'm going to do this. It seems like it takes 5 seconds to make a card deck about marriages. Now the harder part is figuring out how to sell it.
Yeah.
But you can market it on your newsletter.
Yeah.
Or you could market it on your podcast. Or your everybody who's ever emailed you, you know, you can email them. I just made this card deck. Or you could put it in a Facebook thing. Or you could buy, you know, ads on relationship sites. I don't know if like Tinder sells ads or other dating sites sell ads, but you could buy an ad on, there's probably plenty of places. You could buy an ad on Pornhub, like it's for 3 cents and people certainly at least want relationships there, or maybe they have relationships that they're not satisfied with. I don't know.
Yeah.
And so you could just try different ways to market it given that, and by the way, here's an idea. You can advertise it before you even make it because you can make it just like one card and have a graphic designer make it as if it's real. And then if you get enough people interested, then you place the order for the cards.
Right.
So, and if nobody's interested, you could say, forget it. The other thing is you have to set up an order page. But that's pretty easy to do, right? You could just, there's plenty of like, Shopify or Etsy or even eBay and Amazon store to set up an order page. And those are, it seems like, so coming up with the situations, getting it printed, figuring out the first few places to advertise it or market it, and setting up an order page. Those are really just the four tasks to set up a card deck business. It's a pretty quick way to make another spoke. Now, maybe it could flop, or maybe in the worst case scenario, you make 10 or 100 decks and you do them as a giveaway for the next 100 people who subscribe to your newsletter. Who knows?
Yeah.
There's some other use for it that you could do. Or it's just a fun thing. A friend of mine wrote a book, Giftology, John Rulin, about the importance of, you know, getting business through giving good gifts. And his book's called Giftology. And maybe it's just your own personal deck that you've made and you give it as a gift to people, and that, you know, keeps the connection with them in some interesting way. So, you know, this is just to say that all these ideas, like at first an idea feels overwhelming, like, oh my gosh, now I got to make a game and a card deck. But actually it might be fun to make up 200 situations. At the very least, that's content for a newsletter.
Yeah.
And it could be like, here's what you need to ask your girlfriend or boyfriend the day before you get married. And then you give the 200 situations, or part one is 100 situations, part two is another 100.
Yeah.
And so that makes the newsletter easier. That's the worst case scenario, is that you have 100 interesting situations and you never make the card deck. So I always try to think of, do I get value out of the worst case situation? So the worst case is this is a bad idea, but maybe I could transform the idea into something else. And so let's see. So 10 businesses outside the wedding industry. I'm looking at your list right now. Live streamer, motivational advice, pep talker, text message. Yeah, all these things are fun ideas. Coaching or courses to help people build something. That's a good idea, that as you get an audience, you could think about what types of courses. And then, what's this one? Old things that aren't making money but could. Oh,
is that
did I lose you?
Old things. Oh, so just all of my projects that aren't making money that could be monetized, you know, like the, just like the pod, I have a podcast that's not making money, and like another one of my newsletters for 7 years not making money. So I have so many foundations that could make money, but they're just not.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just a matter of thinking about them in different ways. So for instance, you could take, we might've talked about this before. You could take some of your podcast episodes. Let's say you have a bunch of podcast episodes. I'm just making this up, about adultery.
Yep.
You could write a book, How to Deal with Adultery, by combining those episodes, getting the transcripts, having an editor, you know, shape it up a little bit, and then uploading it to Amazon, and you have a book done. And so that's a way to kind of take an advantage you have, which is you have a bunch of content about a topic, and then transform that advantage into something that's maybe a little bit more monetizable, like a book or a newsletter or a course, and create it. So that's another, that's again, this idea of transforming a positive advantage into an even greater positive advantage. So, you know, depending on how you measure positive. So I always look at like my own podcast and, oh, okay. So like, here's an idea. I'm looking at your list that you've been adding every week, or every time you've been on, you've been sending me notes beforehand of what you did and what you're doing and what you're working on and what you're thinking about and questions you have. And so far you have sent me, you have sent me 38 pages in just a few episodes of this. Mm-hmm. You've sent me 38 pages of notes. Well, after 10 or 20 episodes of this, or let's just say 10 episodes, not only will you be on your way to making money, but you have a book about your process of making your first million, say, or your first X. And this is a book that you'll mind. All these notes are going to turn into a book at some point. So everything could be transformed, is a good way to look at it. And you don't know really in advance which is the one that becomes the home run.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully all of them do, but one of them will.
Yeah.
And boom, that's how you transform, for instance, even just these notes into something that could make money.
Do you think I worry about exhausting my audience? Do you think that's something to worry about, is exhausting your audience with every week or every other week? Oh, a new book, a new this, a new that.
You know, I've thought about that as well. Like sometimes there have been some years I put out like two books, and there was one time I put out five episodes a week, and then I was doing another podcast at the same time. So altogether I was putting out eight episodes of me a week. And even Ryan Holiday told me, oh, you're going to tire out your audience. But I don't think that's true. I think what happens is you might not get as many readers or viewers per episode or issue or whatever, but you'll ultimately grow your number of unique readers. So some readers might say, oh, well, I'm not going to read everything that Jen puts out, but now I get to pick and choose what I'm going to read, and or listen to or whatever. And but the more content you have, the more opportunities it gives for people to share. And so ultimately your overall audience of unique followers grows, even if per episode doesn't grow.
Yeah.
It's just people will pick and choose now what to listen to. So I don't think ultimately it's a bad thing. I think everybody always says it's quality, not quantity. I actually think it's the reverse. I think it's quantity, because out of the quantity, you'll get some quality.
Yeah.
And like, you know, there's people out there who write, who want to be writers, but they are perfectionists. So they want to write, they want to put 20 years into making that one great novel. Well, you need experience to make a great novel. You can't, it's very rare that the first book someone writes is makes their whole career and makes them millions. So you have to write a lot to be a good writer, and to have the luck and to have the right combination of things that will make that. You don't really know in advance what's going to be popular and what isn't. So it's really, it's a lot of making money is a quantity game. And I wouldn't worry about people getting tired, unless it's like sometimes, for instance, if I write every article, well, I went broke and then this is what I did, people will get tired of that. They won't read my articles anymore. He always writes about going broke and then bouncing back. I've read that already.
Yeah.
But if I slice my life in different ways and have different ways of perspectives of looking at things, then people, you know, okay, I don't want to read about him going broke again, but he just did a profile of Leonardo da Vinci in his own unique way. Leonardo da Vinci went broke and here's how he came back from it. I'll read that. And so you kind of just have different ways to slice things. And that's how you make, you know, that's how you turn that quantity, the advantage of quantity, you transform it into the advantage of quality, which transforms into a greater audience overall.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it makes total sense. And I appreciate that. And I think it's just such a thing I'm always so scared of. Even with this week, when I said, okay, I'm going to put out 3 newsletters. The first one, I thought of you because I was so scared to press send. It was about going to a marriage therapist with Adam. And I was so scared because it was so personal. And I figured maybe it would scare some people. Maybe, I don't know. I was so scared. Finally pressed send on it. It took me way too long to do that. Then this morning, I said, you know what? I'm not going to be a perfectionist. I'm just going to write it in 25 minutes and send it out. And I did that. And I felt such a shift.
And it's awesome.
Thank you. But I felt a shift. And I also thought of you, and I felt so scared to put that out, because you always say, if you're not, you know, you always say that you get scared. If you're not feeling scared, then maybe it's not good enough almost. Or I forget how you say it about some of the things you write. But that marriage therapist one was so personal and scary to press publish on, but it got so much attention. And I think that was big.
Even 52 annoying questions people ask right after you get married. This was an experiment for you also, because you have, it's a listicle. And sometimes people are afraid, oh, did I really do anything original with a listicle? Sometimes people don't like those. By the way, listicles do great.
Yeah.
There's a reason why it's the 10 commandments and not the commandments. So listicles historically do really good. There's a reason that lots of religious texts are numbered. There's the 4 Noble Truths. There's the 108 Yoga Sutras. There's the 10 Commandments. The books of the New Testament are numbered, and on and on. But I think I would do more listicles even. But like, for instance, what were you scared when you published this one? Oh, you published this one also while you were Twitch streaming. So there's, you could be afraid that potentially it's, you know, you were distracted while you're writing it, and you know, it might not be as interesting. But this was an awesome one, the 52 annoying questions. So, and also you might not want to piss off. Here's another thing I would be afraid of if I was writing this one. I wouldn't want to piss off anybody who was asking me those questions. So
yeah, I mean, I've been writing nonfiction for so long that I piss everyone in my life, because everything is content to me. Every conversation is going to be written, you know. So I'm not never really scared of that. Though I was a little scared about, you know, Adam is now the main character of all my stories. Luckily, he doesn't really care. But now I'm writing about my husband, you know, and our first year of marriage. So I don't ever ask him. I just put it out there first.
It's crazy. Like I have lost friends, family, customers. Everything from my writing. And you know, that shouldn't happen, but sometimes it has, and it's out of your control. I try never to hurt anybody in my writing, but except for myself, I'm willing to hurt myself. But yeah, it is always important to feel afraid before you hit publish. It might be because you're stylistically afraid that, oh, this style is not gonna work, or maybe you're afraid somebody might be offended when they shouldn't be, or maybe you're afraid like you're being too vulnerable. But something should, and the reason is because when you're afraid, you know you're doing something unique that no one else has ever done before. You're doing something unexpected, and only the unexpected is going to stand out.
Yeah.
You know, I used to say better to be the only than the best, but actually even better than that is better to do the unexpected than to be the only. Mm. And, you know, if you think about a thriller novel, it's not that if someone writes the only thriller novel about, you know, janitors afraid of spiders, that might not be so interesting. But if you do something unexpected where it's a janitor and suddenly everybody in the school is vampires and he has to figure out how to survive and stop them from taking over the world, that's a little more unexpected.
Yeah.
And so I think the unexpected is interesting. Like, you know, because you're married and here you are writing about the problems of marriage. It's kind of an interesting little twist.
Right.
And it's only the first year.
Right. I'm in month 3 of being married and I'm already writing about divorce and stuff. But
The way, that's a newsletter topic. Why am I writing a newsletter about divorce in the first year when I just got married? What does my husband think of this? You could interview your husband, what he thinks about it. And that's an episode and people are going to share it.
I love it. You know, two fun facts I learned this week writing about marriage was one, 50% of people go to marriage therapy. And the second fun fact was that most people go for an average of 12 sessions with 66% of them improving in 20 sessions or less.
Really? I wonder how many people go to a couples therapist who ultimately get divorced.
I thought it was interesting that 50% of people get divorced, but also 50% of people go to a marriage therapist. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I wonder what the overlap there is.
I know.
But
and also,
since 66% get better, that's pretty good.
But then it's like, what does better even mean? I feel like no one is exploring what any of this means. Like, what does it mean to actually improve? This is a relationship. I'm fascinated by this world because I think people talk about marriage in such concrete ways and it's just not, that's not really how it should be talked about.
So. Yeah. No, so all this is good. I think, I think we came up with other ways of thinking about different streams of income.
Yeah.
I answered some of your questions ranging from the newsletter to work. By the way, in terms of hours a day to work, the average person works about 2 hours a day. Like the average person in an office works about 2 hours a day. So when somebody says, oh my gosh, you're just doing too much, I'm feeling exhausted just listening to you, it's they that's in their mind. Like the reality is all of these things we discussed and all of these things you're doing probably shouldn't take you more than 3-4 hours a day.
Yeah.
And that's not so long. Like we talked about a lot of things. Again, we talked about making a card deck. It'd probably take you less than 4 hours in one day to make an entire card deck business.
I agree. I mean, even just doubling
at least the first 2/3 of it.
Doubling the subscribers from 100 to 200. I sat down yesterday, did 10 different things. It didn't take me all day and I got double. So yeah, I agree with you. I think while it might be exhausting to some people, I still live a decent life. I don't sit at the computer all day, you know? So I think that's fascinating, but I have a list of things I want to do next time. Like I want to start the card process. I want to, you know, do something with the odd jobs. Like I have a couple things I want to work on because I think it could be cool to see what happens.
And you know, it's interesting. Like in this past year, I published 2 books. I of course do my podcast 3-4 times a week. I've started a business or two. I released a TV series. I did a lot of stand-up comedy I do lots of things. And people say, oh my gosh, that's so much. I wish I had your kind of time. I don't have any time. What's your secret? And I don't have a secret. I don't really work more than 3 or 4 hours a day. That's kind of my limit. And then I like to enjoy my life after that. It just is a matter of efficiency in time. And that's really the only secret. Most people, again, work 2 hours a day and view that as a whole day. And the other thing is, it's not about the number of hours. It's about are your efforts compounding or just adding to your results? So, and I don't know how to really describe that, but if you just think in that way, am I compounding or am I adding? there's no way to really quantify this because it's not something you can measure really. Like your results are hard to measure. But if you just have a mindset like, are my activities compounding the efforts I've put in before, or am I just adding stuff? That's important too, because compounding, like when I started writing, I wrote articles about finance initially. Those were my first paying jobs. And I was compounding because I had a unique writing style. This is like in 2002. I had a unique writing style for finance, and I started getting more and more followers, and they would share my stuff because I always tried to make sure it was shareable. And so I had a sense that I was compounding, and that's how I built up an audience in the finance space and then much later in other areas of life. But so just thinking in terms of compounding is a good way to think about time. And like when you learn something, did I learn just one new thing, or did this one new thing I learn really add to all the knowledge I've had previously? So let's say I'm learning, how to play tennis. So if you learn tennis, you learn how to do a forehand, you learn how to do a backhand. And now if you learn how to, weightlifting in such a specific way will make your forehand more powerful, then you didn't just learn, okay, now I'm going to learn a little bit about weightlifting. The 3 hours you spent learning these new weightlifting techniques added to the 100 hours previously that you spent learning how to do the forehand. So yeah, Everything you've learned previously has more value now. And so that's kind of a compounding way of learning or doing things, is that the new thing you do adds to all of the old things you do. So in chess, for instance, which I'm trying to learn in a unique way right now, if I learn how to play the end of the game better, it actually adds to everything I've learned about how to play the opening of the game better. Sort of a dorky thing to mention, but it's true. It's how I compound my learning there.
Yeah. So, which I think is so important for a solopreneur, because you're on your own. There is no one forcing you to do anything. And I think learning how to compound in many different aspects of what you do every day is just so important. And also learning how to be more efficient, because you can sit down for 3 to 4 hours and not get anything done, and then you feel sort of bad about your day. But I think as a solopreneur, learning the art of compounding is such an important thing.
Yeah. So anyway, this is all great. Like, I think we've covered a lot of stuff from weird businesses to card decks to answering your questions. Great job doubling your number of subscribers. I can't wait to see what you do for next week or next session. And then sooner or later, we will start monetizing. It's just now you're kind of laying the foundation. Can't build the house till you have a good, solid foundation.
I agree. But I did have someone reach out to me and pitch me like a product. And I said, hey, I have a newsletter. I want to advertise in it. So I'm already I'm already putting things out there to see, hey, why not, you know?
Another good thing is to look for affiliate deals. So, and just for people who don't know, an affiliate deal is somebody's advertising a real estate course and they don't pay for the ad, but there's a lot of software to track if somebody who subscribes to their course comes from your newsletter, and you get 50% or 80% or whatever of the revenues of whoever you send over. So that's an affiliate deal, and those could be quite lucrative. I've made more money from affiliate deals than ads on my own newsletter. So that's an important thing. So next week we could start thinking about different experiments we could do to try to monetize.
Amazing. I'm excited. I'm going to have some new interesting things for you next week, aside from the newsletter, because I am so awesome. I just love a lot of these ideas. So you'll be hearing from me soon with some cool new things also.
Excellent. All right. Well, Jen, thanks so much for this. This is great. And I'll see you in the next week
so. Thanks, James. I'll talk to you soon.
Good luck. Thanks.
People today can spend half their lives over 50. So it's good to be financially ready for what's important to you as you get older, like a family vacation.
Cannonball!
Or starting your dream business.
Welcome to Connie's Coffee. How may I help you?
AARP's trusted financial tools can help you plan for whatever your future holds. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Start planning today at aarp.org/moneytools.